Log Talk Radio.
Word, biblios, many books, taken through the ages, ageless, timeless, prophets, apostles, epistles, the gospel, the righteous, the hostile, the woeful, the wonderful.
On the Sabbath days or on Sundays, it's easy to find me. It's most likely up in your churches where I might be. It's millions over this earth who would tell you that they like me. But realistically, half of them take what I say lightly.
Yo, they just push me off the table like they don't need me. Look me in my face like they don't see me.
What?
Granny's off the church and she won't leave me. Then she comes home from church, but she won't read me.
My name, King James Version. Born in 1611, I was made to teach brethren how to reach the kingdom of heaven. I might not be saying the same thing as your reverend. My quote was broke, but it ain't the way it's living.
You probably catch me at your grandma's house, opening Psalms. I was like your grandpa's spouse over in Arm. You catch me in a small jailhouse over in Guam. I speak about the hotel from nowhere to John.
Now travel through my pages, learn about the ancients. Life and death is in me, but some don't want to hear me. Misuse me to conquer many lands. Many men have been slaves for who I am, the saints. Blood on their hands.
Governments attempted to get rid of me and still trying. Society refused to listen to me and still dying. I give counsel to disciples on his field grind to remind them that the place they want to be is still dying.
Yo, I'm a bookshelf missionary. I could school the school books plus Dr. Seuss in the dictionary. What's written is power. I'm sitting in the parlor. I'm the only book closed, but I open at any hour.
It's always a nappy head kid with a gold tooth with his hand on my head saying he swear to tell the whole truth.
Yo, dude, they got me on a show called Dusty. Living godly is a must, but don't nobody trust me.
I teach about the old trails, mortars the bomb, seven plagues, seven seals, soldiers the swarm, rage in the field, soldiers, storms, the comings, the horns, you've been warned.
A lot of preachers want me on their team just to make a profit, when all I want to do is give you words of the sacred prophets, so my creators can see believers making progress. I warn them of the dangers and loving material objects.
Open me up, pray to the God of all men, the God of Jacob, Isaac, the God of Abraham. May he open up his plan, why he came as a man. God 12 and spread his truth to every nation through the land.
Yo, we kicked it, you was once sober, but you won't show my name, cause when your friends came, you keep turning my front over. What's this on my back? Use me as a cup coaster. Come closer, let me do my job like I'm supposed
yo,
to.
Yo, bro, there's 66 books in me, good and plenty. But up north, they rip out pages to puff sense. But the saints study intensely, cause there's riches in me. But to the wicked, I ain't repenting.
And you can run around wildin', looking in the sky, or you can read me, choose life or die. Who's right but I, man, a tooth for an eye. The water's broke loose, now the fire's gonna fry.
I'm the Bible,
I'm the Bible. I hold the keys to survival. I'm here to strengthen God's saints and the water's vital.
I'm the Bible,
I'm the Bible. I'm telling you, stop serving these idols. Ain't no other God, the Lord holding that title.
I'm the Bible,
I'm the Bible. Original holy scrolls, comfort lonely souls with the oracles of the moral code.
I'm the Bible, I'm the Bible.
I'm trying to save many men, but any who pretend his kingdom, they won't be getting them.
I'm the number one selling book of all time. I done made billions. But if the people don't understand, I ain't happy. So come get with me, sit with me, and I'm going to show you mysteries.
All right, all right, all right, all right. Shalom, good morning. It's coming to you definitely if you're out there on the East Coast. Welcome once again to another one of our episodes. You have tuned in to the Sword of Truth Bible Talk. My name is Mashallah. I'm one of the teachers here with the Israelite School of Biblical History and Pastoral Knowledge, which by no means is excluding any other Hebrew Israelite group. As out there, we are Hebrew Israelites, Hebrew being our language, Israelite being our nationality. And the purpose of our show is to help awaken the 12 lost tribes of the nation of Israel. Those people being the so-called Negroes, West Indians, Puerto Ricans, Haitians, Dominicans, Cubans, North American Indians, Seminole Indians, Argentinians, Chileans, Brazilians, Colombians, Panamanians, and so-called Mexicans. Those people that are located in North, Central, South America who have lost their identity. But by no means does that exclude or disannul any of the other scriptures where it was prophesied that the 12 tribes of Israel will be scattered throughout all nations. But our ministry is focused on for those people who have been scattered throughout the Americas, North, Central, and South America, that the truth of their identity, being either the, part of the aboriginals of America or the ones brought on slave ships, that your true identity is you are a member by blood, by nationality, by spirit, of the 12 tribes of the nation of Israel, and that our exile, our punishment here in America was just that, a punishment for us not keeping commandments, laws, statutes, culture, and heritage that God gave to us through Moses and carried down when we came into the promised land, when we had the greatest of everything. No GMO foods, no hybrid foods, no, we were homeschooling. Everything that everybody's trying to do now in America, guess what we had when we was in the promised land? Everyone who's trying to shop at this Sprouts or Whole Foods or grow your own food, the Most I told the children of Israel, if we keep his commandments, he gives the former and latter rain. We didn't have to worry about no Miracle-Gro, no Monsanto. We had to worry about no chemical agents being in the food so the food would grow. We were in the promised land, the best land on the planet, with your school social studies classes would deem the Fertile Crescent, Mesopotamia. That was ours. We were there. It tells you that when we came into the promised land, it took two ex-slaves. I will stress that. I can only imagine two big Debo, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. In case you don't know who the hell Debo is, the gray hair is real. Dwayne The Rock Johnson type of brothers to carry a branch of grapes. If it took two men to carry a branch of grapes, how'd they carry a watermelon? Wow. How big were the seeds of the damn watermelon? Anyway, or peas, or squash, or pumpkin. That it was the most fertile place that we had, fertile place on the planet. We ruined it. We messed it up with our knowing to keep the laws and statutes and commandments of the Father. So we were exiled, grounded, punished here to the Americas for our disobedience. And then now that we've gone through being grounded, a parent might ground a child from we talk about this all the time. When we were younger, if you got grounded, sent to your room, that was punishment. You looking outside your window and seeing everybody outside playing, having a good time,
climbing trees,
doing whatever they're doing, and you felt bad because you couldn't be outside. Kids today, to get grounded,
go to your room.
Go to your room. They stay there already.
Because that's where everything is: the iPad, the phones,
iPad, electronics,
gaming systems, computers, laptops. I don't need to go outside.
What kind of punishment is it now to punish your kids? You got to send them outside. That's punishment now.
Or really now, because they do it with the commercials. You want to get everybody's attention? You lock the Wi-Fi in the house up.
Right.
And that's punishment now. You were saying what?
That's ridiculous. That's utterly ridiculous. But we were grounded from the promised land for our disobedience. But now the Most High is ready, just like a good parent does. You talk to your child. Okay, you've been grounded. And you learned your lesson. Why did you get grounded? Why did you have to go through this? If you really repented and are sincere, cool, all right, cool. A parent doesn't stay mad at their child forever. You've not won trust, or you got another shot at now getting your privileges back. Well, for the slavery that we've been through, the 500 years from when Columbus and them first got here, or when the first slave ship started, 1619, and from that time now, that was our punishment. That was us getting grounded and getting beat. Real quick, give me Psalm 13:17 or 17:13, you know, sometimes I get that mixed up. Let's
Psalms chapter 17, verse 13.
All right.
Arise, O Lord, disappoint him, cast him down, deliver my soul from the wicked, which is thy sword.
It said that, so David was even praying that to deliver our soul from where?
From the wicked.
From the wicked, which is what?
Which is thy sword.
Which is the Most High's sword. Basically, the Most High used the wicked as a belt. Reading on.
Verse 14. For men which are thy hand.
For men which are what?
Thy hand.
For men which are thy hand. Go ahead.
O Lord, for the world, which have their portion in this life, and whose belly thou fillest with thy head, with thy hid treasures, they are full of children.
Right, so the Most High, David is explaining to us that he uses men as a belt. He uses nations as a belt against the children of Israel. So for us being here and suffering all the Black Lives Matter tragedies, must suffering all the Emmett Till murders, must suffering all the being called illegal immigrants on what's supposed to be our own land, for there to be no justice and no peace, that voting is not going to help us, because it wasn't the fact that we didn't vote that got us in this trouble. It wasn't that we weren't spending black dollars in black businesses. When we understand we ruled Europe, we built Nottingham Palace. We built was it in Russia, the damn
St. Petersburg
Square. We've had gold riches. We've had, straight land. We built the castles over there in Europe, Germany, Prussia.
England, Scotland.
Well, that was all ours at one time. So it's not the fact that we never pulled economics together. We had economics. We had gold with our faces on it. That wasn't the problem. The problem was we have not been obeying our Father. We've not been obeying our God. So our God punished us. And the way God punishes the nation of Israel, he raises up other nations and uses other nations against us. That's how he punishes us. So we've been punished. But now he's returned to us the right way. Now he's wanting to see, are we ready? Have we been rehabilitated? Are we ready to reform? Or to use a more biblical term, are we ready to repent? And now start doing things the right way. Whereas it's been hid from us. How to do things in God's way, the Father's way, the Creator's way. Now he's returning that back to us. Now he's saying, are we ready? Are we ready? So now he can bring us back to the promised land. Now, or like it says in Revelations, now we're ready for the marriage. Now we've been cleaned up. Now we've been circumcised. Now we've been made pure. That now we can join Christ in the marriage. And that's what, again, the purpose of our class and the teaching that we're doing, as well as many other brothers and camps doing out there, is trying to help Israel. Now let's get right. Let's get cleaned up. We've been polluted. Our philosophy, our mentality, our wisdom, knowledge, understanding has been given to us by our enemies. Now the Lord has returned the way back to our culture, back to us. But there's still a lot of scrubbing, a lot of cleansing, a lot of cleaning that we got to do in coming back together. All right? So with that, without no further avail, we did get started at 11, but we didn't turn the radio on. We didn't turn the broadcast on like we're supposed to. My apologies for that, because I'm seeing people starting to get on the line and in the operator call screening. Today's Sabbath, today's Sabbath readings is going to be Genesis chapter 23, verse 1 through Genesis chapter 25, verse 18. All right, that's going to be what they call in Hebrew the Parashat, right, which is the Old Testament readings from the Torah. Then we have the Haftorah, which is from the writings. Right, the writings is from, obviously, after the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, being the Torah. The Haftorah is the rest of the Old Testament. Right? It's the rest of the Old Testament, or what they call the writings. And today's writings is going to be from 1 Kings chapter 1 through 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 1 through verse 31. All right, 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 31 through verse 1 through verse 31. And then the Barath Chadash, the New Testament reading, or the New Covenant reading, is going to be from Matthew chapter 1, verses 1 through 17, and then 1 Corinthians, I need the whole thing. 1 Corinthians chapter, y'all have the readings up, the New Testament readings? I'm going to have it here.
Matthew chapter 1, 1 through 17, the 1 Corinthians 15, verse 50 through 57.
Right. Let me see if I got this here. One website that we got our readings from and keeping up, just try and keep unity. Real quick, give me 1 Corinthians 1 and 10.
First Corinthians chapter 1, verse 10.
And since I forgot the mic, everybody's going to have to speak up a little louder.
Okay. First Corinthians chapter 1, verse 10. Now I beseech you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye all speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, but that ye be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment.
All right, so since we've been scattered as a nation, the last time we were together as a nation, we know historically, was when? Right after King Solomon died. Right after King Solomon died, when the nation of Israel was split into two kingdoms, the southern kingdom of Judah and the northern kingdom of Israel. That was approximately 933 years before Christ. Almost 1,000 years before Christ is the last time we as the nation of Israel were gathered together, even in the same place, in the same geography, in the same location, was 933 years before Christ. Then it went until 1492, and then even later, coming into 1619, when the first slave ships started bringing people over from Africa into to the Americas, that we were actually not in the same physical location. That we were not actually in the same physical locale as a people. But look how much division and separation and scattering there's been since 1933. Let's get the door. Cool. Shalom, what's going on? Yahweh Shabbatah. All right, the brother Nathan has joined us. Again, since 1933, we know from 722 BC is when the so-called natives came to the Americas. And it's around 722 BC. From 722 BC, when the natives, so-called natives, or the aboriginals, first came to the Americas, look how much division they've had in being here in the Americas. When we look at the movies like Apocalypto, and we realize the savagery that we had going on, so we was literally, we was eating each other. What do you call that?
Cannibalism.
There's cannibalism. The worshiping of the blue world, the yellow world, the green world, the worshiping of animals, we the wolf pack, the deer pack, the rat pack, whatever. We didn't keep the laws in the promised land. We didn't keep the laws when we got over here also. So there's been much separation, much division on even the aboriginals. And then by the time you bring the rest of the southern kingdom here on the slave ships, and some are taught Spanish, some are taught English, some are taught Portuguese. And then, even within the Spanish, there's different dialects of Spanish, to where if you don't speak Mexican Spanish, you as opposed to Cuban Spanish, as opposed to Puerto Rican Spanish, you're off. Or the different dialects of Portuguese. And then please, don't be speaking English. If you got a West Coast accent, which is different from a Southern accent, which is different from an East Coast accent, and then Lord forbid you go to the islands and they got a whole different Yankee boy accent, and then get to England and it's something totally different, even though it's all English. It's just been nothing but division. It's been nothing but separation. So one thing we do is, coming on the Sabbath, is try to go over just the Sabbath readings, the Torah readings, to just go ahead and get some type of stepping stone, some type of push in the direction of us getting together and unifying. Because it's been from 933 to now. This is 2018. What's 2018 plus
933?
Well, sorry. 33 plus 18 is what? 51? 2951? So approximately 2,951 years.
Wow.
Is the last time we were actually unified. I take that back. Let's add another 40 years to that.
2,991. Almost 3,000.
The reason I'm adding another 40 years, because remember, for Solomon's reign, which was 40 years, we had division. David unified us. So we will go chronologically. What number you came up with?
2,991.
Almost 3,000 years ago was the last time we were actually unified in the same mind and in the same judgment under David's rule. That's a long time, and that's a lot of separation. So to come back now, first generation, maybe second generation Hebrew Israelites, knowing that we're Hebrew Israelites, come back into our knowledge, being aware of just our name, let alone our language, there's going to be a lot of things we got to work out. Right? There's going to be a lot of things that we ain't going to quite see eye to eye on, but we're going to work to get there. So on the stepping stone of where to get there, we do the Sabbath readings, Torah readings, and we try to make sure we do it every Sabbath, every Shabbat, on Saturday mornings. Now, I'll tell you, from our broadcast, and for those who are frequent listeners with us, you know, sometimes we don't do the Sabbath readings because you've got so many different brothers in different churches and different schools doing the Sabbath readings. And sometimes to me that seems redundant. If you're going to tune in over here, we do Sabbath readings, whereas this camp is on YouTube doing the exact same Sabbath readings, and this camp over here is it's not to be divisive. I hope I'm not sounding hypocritical. Sometimes we come together here in Albuquerque, and we just deal with some issues, or we deal with some things that's on everybody's mind, and just going over some scriptures and everything. But it's not to be divisive. It's just that sometimes that's just where it's at. Today we're going to go ahead and get to the Sabbath readings. And since I started the show an hour late, if you're not already called in, after an hour at 12 p.m. here at Albuquerque time, you won't be able to call in or log in. If you stay logged in, you'll be able to listen to the show in its entirety, all right, for the most part. So with that, let's get started. I'm going to read this. This is a synopsis about today's Torah readings. And I'm at the website HebrewForChristians.com. HebrewForChristians.com. And they have the page I'm on is the weekly Torah reading. And what they say is Parashat Chaya Sarah. And which is what in Hebrew would be Parashat Chaya Sarah, which would be the life of Sarah. I'm just going to read that real quick, and then we're going to get into the readings. It says, Torah reading snapshot. Last week's parashat recounted, and if anybody has got the same page pulled up, I'd appreciate it. Y'all know my vision is really getting bad. Recounted how the Lord was faithful to Abraham and Sarah by miraculously giving them a son, Isaac, in their old age. Nonetheless, Abraham faced his greatest test of all by being asked to offer up his child as a sacrifice on Mount Moriah, the place of the future temple. On account of Abraham's willingness to obey, the Lord promised that he would multiply his offspring as the stars of heaven, and that in his seed, singular, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. This week's parashah, called Chaya Sarah, the life of Sarah, begins paradoxically with the account of Sarah's death. Abraham had encamped at various times at the trees of Mamre, just east of Hebron. And this is the place where Sarah, the mother, or in Hebrew was Sarah, the mother of the Israelite people, died at the age of 127. Some of the sages
have said that the shock of the near sacrifice of Isaac is what killed her. Well, we didn't do this last week, but when you go back and read the history that Josephus records about the that event, he gives a little more details about it. It tells you that the night that the Lord appeared to Abraham and let him know he needed to sacrifice, that Isaac's life was required, that Abraham rose up immediately that morning before the sun even came up and got two servants and got Isaac and dipped. He didn't even tell Sarah what was going on because he knew that her cries, her tears, her protest, it'd be too much to bear. So he just took Isaac and dipped. Now, you're looking at Josephus. It records Isaac at this time being 28 years old. I know some Bible story telling, we're left with the impression that Isaac might have been like 12, 6. No, he was actually, from what Josephus says, 28 years old. Now, if you go back and examine that for a little bit, Abraham was told to put Ishmael away when Ishmael was 14 years old. And you read in Genesis chapter 17, the protest that Abraham put up for wanting Ishmael to be the one. He was his oldest born. And the father told Abraham, look, I got you. I got Ishmael. He's your seed. I know you love him. You spent 14 years with him. You poured into him. Matter of fact, you didn't think that you were going to have a seed. You ain't somebody Hagar. Not a problem. But I'm going to deal with Isaac. Don't worry about Ishmael. Put him he's covered. Just do what I'm going to say. That was 14 years. Isaac being 28, that means Abraham spent twice as much time with Isaac than he did with Ishmael. 28 years. And for the Most High to say, he's going to be your seed. He's going to be your heir. I'm going to work through him. How much do you think Abraham poured into Isaac? How much of attachment do you think was there? Then now he's being asked, kill Isaac. Sacrifice to me Isaac. And then, in Josephus explains, from where Abraham was at to Mount Moriah, that was a 3-day journey. The Most High made sure Abraham had time to think about what it was he was about to do. What kind of doubt do you think might have hit a person? Hey, nobody ever had to sacrifice their kids. Now you got to do this? From Adam all the way up, no one had to sacrifice their kids. But now, for me to show my love to you, I got to, ain't this what the heathen do? I done put all this work, did all this, and now I got to kill. You said Isaac was going to be my son, and that he's going to live through him. And I got to kill him? Yeah, plenty of time to think about and let the doubt, the thoughts plague his mind. But where was Abraham able to show his love? He didn't go with his feelings. That would hit any man. What he had to go with? The words of the Most High. What were the words of the Most High? And Isaac shall thy seed be called. So Abraham held on to that. He believed the Most High. So if I got to kill Isaac, then I guess someone, you could be a resurrection, a refining. Something's going to happen. Because, Father, you gave your word 30 years ago that in Isaac shall my seed be called. You gave your word. And he believed those words. So he was able to use that to fight the feelings, to fight the emotions, to fight the worldly reasoning that would hit his mind. But this is my family. You blessed me with Isaac. Why I got to give him my blessing? You know how much hard work I put in the building of Isaac? You made me get rid of Ishmael. And I loved Ishmael. I begged for Ishmael. You made me get rid of him. Now I got to kill. It's been 28 years. Now I got to kill Isaac? But the fact he fought through all them type of thoughts and feelings and emotions, that's what made Abraham the friend of the Most High. That's what made Abraham, when the Most High brags about Abraham, I know, Abraham, you're going to teach your children to fear me. And again, for those that if you were able to join us for when we was going over Noah, Remember, Noah lived, what was it? Well, Shem lived, what, 50 years? Remember, Shem lived 15 years of Joseph's life.
Yeah.
Remember, Joseph went into Egypt at 17. Shem lived 15 years of.
Wow,
how many generations did he live? Abraham. I gotta go back and
get the chart again. Yeah, he had some little bit of Abraham. He still had Joseph, too.
Abraham lived 15 years of Joseph's life.
Wow.
And Shem lived. 50 years. Shem lived 50 years of Joseph's life.
We can do that again.
To get right. when we go through chronology, put the chronology together. He had all that teaching, and that anyway for the point. But this one, Abraham became a friend of the Most High. You go fight your thoughts, fight your feelings, fight your attachment in order to keep the Most High's word. We can say what Christ told us in John 15:14 and 14:15. You're my friends if you do what I command you. We together if you do what I command you. For Abraham to do what the Most commanded, and believing the Most High's word, and Isaac shall thy seed be called. Abraham held on to that. So when it's time to kill Isaac, it tells you that Isaac, Abraham, when they got to the Mount Moriah, and Isaac was asking about what's the sacrifice? In Josephus, it says that Abraham explained this to Isaac, you're the sacrifice. This is what the Most High said I got to do. It says that Isaac encouraged his father, then do it. And Isaac willingly got up on whatever was built, the altar that was built, what have you, to give his life. Because it was all about the Most High. And it was at that time that the Most High stopped Abraham from killing Isaac and said, I see that you love me above everything. I see you really do put me first. And that was the last time we read about Abraham ever being tempted by the Most High to challenge his love to see where his heart was really at. We know from 75, Abraham was told to leave all you know, all you're familiar with, at 75 years of age. 7 decades. Leave everything you're familiar with and that you know. And just walk. That's the question, just walk. He did it. 11 years later, Abraham, do you love me? Even though he didn't ask you, but Abraham, circumcise yourself. And your son Ishmael and all the men that are with you. Cut your privates. And one last, it's not like we were like the Greeks and walked around in togas and the way we salute each other was we opened up the toga. Shalom. Are you a Hebrew?
Let me see.
We didn't. The only one that would know you were circumcised would be the Most High, you, and your wives. No one else would know. So how? I got to show my love to God. I got to cut my most sensitive part of my body
at
86. What did Abraham do? Snip. He did it. As it is, then at 100, you got to put Ishmael away. Isaac's born. 28 years later, kill Isaac. These were some real challenges that he had to put up with to show his faith in the Most High's word. And to be an example for us, that he was named the father of faith. He was named the friend of the Most High. Are you going to challenge your thoughts and your emotions and your feelings to become a friend of the Most High? like our father Abraham had to go through, like our father Abraham had to do. That, come on, it's from the relationship the Most I had with Abraham that was shared with Isaac, that shared with Jacob. That's the only reason why we're here today. That's the only reason why we have a chance to even come back to the Father, is because of how special that relationship was between Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob with the Most High. That because of the promise he made to Abraham, that's the only reason I'm going to save these guys. That's the only reason I'm going to give my only begotten son, torture and bruise and kill him, to give y'all a chance back because of Abraham, your faith, your dedication, what you did. So let's make sure as we go through the reading and everything, we understand and get a comprehension about how special an example that was given to us that we're going to have to follow also, that we might be asked to do something similar and not get these worldly thoughts of, I don't think God wants me to go through that. I don't think God really wants my family to go through something like that. I don't think God really wants it to be that way. I only asked him, what Bible are you reading? Anyway, I'm going to finish this up. So it was a three-day journey from where he was at, from Mamre to the Mount Moriah. And it says, Abraham inquired about the... After mourning for Sarah, Abraham spoke to the sons of Heth, Banchat, saying he was a stranger and a sojourner among them, and asked to bury his wife in a nearby cave of Machpelah. Abraham inquired about the place for the cave and field, and without any negotiation, paid Ephraim, the Hittite's asking price of 400 shekels of silver, an exuberant price in the full presence of the leaders of the Hittites. He then buried Sarah in a cave among the people of the Hittites. Abraham's insistence upon separate Jewish burial site is part of Jewish law to this day, reflecting the Jew's role in life and society, a stranger and a sojourner here, yet not there. After this, Abraham's servant, Eleazar, which would be Izar of Damascus, the one Abraham had originally thought would be his heir, made a covenant with Abraham to find his son Isaac a wife from among his relatives living in Mesopotamia, and not from among the Canaanites. Eleazar took the oath and on the 5 mile journey, also called the city of Nor, and the place where his father died. Chapels laid to give his search Isaac's bride. I didn't know that I was traveling. At a village well near the city of Nahor, Elias made the camels kneel down and asked for his son. When the maids would come to the well, he would ask some for water to drink, but the woman who offered to also draw water for his camels as well will be one chosen by the Lord for Abraham's son. Before he had finished praying, Rebekah, Abraham's nephew's daughter, came out with her water jar on her shoulder. Izar ran to meet her and asked her for a drink, and after giving him some water, generously offered to draw water for all 10 of his camels. After she passed the test, Eleazar gave her expensive rings and bracelets and inquired of her family status. When he learned that the Lord had led him directly to Abraham's closest kinsman, Rebekah was the granddaughter of Abraham's brother Nahor. He was overjoyed and thanked the Lord for guidance and success. We don't get into this reading, but there's nothing wrong with testing to see if this is the woman that you with.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nothing wrong with testing to make sure the Lord sent her.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with believing in the scripture. In that day, 7 women shall take hold of 1 man, saying we will eat our own bread, wear our own apparel, just let us be called by your name. The little woman being patient to make sure the woman you with was sent by the Most High. And I'm not going to go into all that, but from Proverbs 31 to Ecclesiastes 26 in the Apocrypha, there are many things that can be done, and it's nothing wrong with you testing. And for the sisters also, ain't nothing wrong with testing to make sure this individual you're supposed to be with. There's nothing wrong with testing that notion before you lay down and have sex. There's nothing wrong with me to see, is this the one the Most High sent for me? Now, to all men, let's not get religious either. Ain't no one, nobody perfect. No wife is just
on point,
ready made.
100% ready made. Mm-hmm. You just showed up.
It is.
No problems.
Because you said shalom.
Right.
And she said shalom. Oh, man.
This is it.
This is the water you have. She said shalom, so that must be the sign.
Mm-hmm.
Nigga, she said hi. I'm sorry, brother.
Right.
Ah.
You have to work with
me. She said hi. Man. We got to talking. She said she don't eat pork. I'm like, oh, yes. Muslims don't eat pork.
Right. None of us coming to truth. Really.
Maybe she's vegetarian.
Right.
Maybe she's the follower of Dr. Sabi. But this is why y'all are supposed to get married? Really? Sis, because the man's got a beard and said shalom, that's why y'all got married? Yeah, we was in class for 2 days.
This is the one.
I walked into class and I said, God, if a sister says to me shalom, malak, let her be the one. All right. Meanwhile, Rebecca ran home to tell her family what happened. And her brother, Laban went out to invite Eleazar to come under their hospitality. Eleazar agreed to be, but refused to eat with them until he had clearly communicated the purpose of his mission and fulfilled his promise to his master Abraham, who was 550 miles away.
So in comparison,
he could have easily said, let me eat first.
Right.
Let me get distracted. I am hungry.
So 550 miles is a long way.
550 miles is a long way. I had these 10 camels. This is a lot of hard work.
I mean, camels don't very well.
And Abraham ain't going to know. I mean, look, I sent the test out. She passed the test. It's a done deal. I can eat.
Let's kind of like what we do. Do like kind of let's stop at the store, let's get gas, let's get the essentials for the road trip to keep away.
Right.
Everything.
Well, we might get this done because you know I'm hungry. No, he remembered his mission. Anyway, a lot of lessons here.
Right.
Ezra then rooted, we told the entire story of his journey from Abraham in Canaan, including his prayer to the Lord for the sign of a wife for Abraham's son. Now, Rebecca had passed the divine test. He then asked Rebecca's family whether they would show kindness to the village of Abraham by agreeing to give Rebecca as Isaac's wife, so that Eleazar would know whether to turn to the right hand or to the left. And he did things proper. He was still asking her family for permission. How many of us ask the family for permission? Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. Both Bethuel and Laban agreed that the Lord had indeed chosen Rebekah to be Abraham's son's wife and did not object to the match. Upon hearing this, Eleazar gave Rebekah more gifts and also gave gifts to the rest of the family. They then ate a meal together and spent the night. The following morning, Eleazar wanted to leave for Canaan with Rebekah, but her parents wanted her to stay another 10 days. When he finally asked if she was willing to depart, immediately, she said she was, and left for Canaan without further delay with her maiden servants. Eleazar then led Rebekah back to the land of Canaan, where she met and married Isaac. Isaac loved her and was comforted over the loss of his mother, Sarah. We are then told that after the death of Sarah, Abraham got remarried to a woman named Keturah. Some claim that she was actually Hagar. I don't know about that. Who bore him six more sons. Abraham later gave gifts to these children as a legacy, but left everything else he owned to Isaac, the appointed and exclusive heir of the family. The parasha ends with Abraham's death at age 175, and how his two sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah beside his wife Sarah. As a postscript, we are also told of the descendants of Ishmael and of his death at age 137. All right, cool. So this is what we're about to get into today. All right. So let's go ahead and get to, we got the first reader. Does anybody, anything they want to, let me slow down for a sec. Did anybody want to expound so far just on some of the brief reading that we just went through? Anybody at all? That's cool. All right. The first reader. Do we have it already worked on already?
26 verses, I think, per man.
Yeah, 26 per man. Is it 26.6, 26 close enough?
Let's get it. My eyes are pretty much shot, so.
Genesis.
Yeah, I'm going to use the restroom.
Genesis chapter 23 and verse 1. And Sarah was 107 and 20 years old. These were the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah died in Kirjath Araba, the same as Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. And Abraham stood up from before his dead and spake unto the sons of Heth, saying, I am a stranger and a sojourner with you. Give me possession of a burying place with you, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. And the children of Heth answered Abraham, saying unto him, Hear us, my lord. Thou art a mighty prince among us. In the choice of our sepulchres, bury thy dead. None of us shall withhold from thee his sepulchre, but that thou mayest bury thy dead. And Abraham stood up and bowed himself to the people of the land, even to the children of Heth. And he communed with them, saying, If it be your mind that I should bury my dead out of my sight, hear me and entreat me. And entreat for me to Ephraim, the son of Zorah, that they may give me the cave of
Machpelah,
which he hath, which is in the end of his field, for as much money as it is worth, he shall give it me for a possession of a burying place amongst you. And Ephraim dwelt among the children of Heth, and Ephraim the Hittite answered Abraham in the audience of the children of Heth, even of all that went in at the gate of his city, saying, Nay, my lord, hear me. The field give I thee, and the cave that is therein I give it thee, in the presence of thy sons of my people give I it thee. Bury thy dead. And Abraham bowed down himself before the people of the land. And he spoke unto Ephraim in the audience of the people of the land, saying, But if thou wilt give it, I pray thee, hear me. I will give thee money for the field. Take it of me. I will bury my dead there. And Ephraim answered Abraham, saying unto him, My lord, hearken unto me. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver. What is that betwixt me and thee? Bury therefore thy dead. And Abraham hearkened unto Ephraim, and Abraham weighed to Ephraim the silver, which he had named in the audience of the sons of Heth, 400 shekels of silver. Current money with the merchant. And the field of Ephraim, which was in Machpelah, which was before Mamre, the field, and the cave which was therein, and all the trees that were in the field, that were in all the borders round about it, were made sure unto Abraham for a possession in the presence of the children of Heth, before all that went in at the gates of his city.
And after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, the same as Hebron in the land of Canaan. And the field and the cave that is therein were made sure unto Abraham for a possession of a burying place by the sons of Heth. Genesis chapter 24, verse 1. And Abraham was old and well stricken in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. And Abraham said unto his eldest servant of his house that ruled over all that he had, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and I will make thee swear by the Lord, the heaven, the God of heaven and, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that thou shalt not take a wife unto my son of the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. But thou shalt go unto my country and to my kindred and take a wife unto my son Isaac. And the servant said unto him, peradventure the woman will not be willing to follow me into this land. Must I needs bring thy son again into the land from whence thou comest? And Abraham said unto him, beware thou that thou bring not my son thither again.
That's 26 verses. Who wants to read next? I don't care.
Genesis chapter 24, verse 7. The Lord God of heaven, which took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, which spake unto you.
Anybody gonna expound? Anybody gonna bring out anything that stood out? That's the purpose of the Torah reading is about. I kind of wanted to say something. One thing that stood out to me is like how far he traveled with his deceased wife, like before he actually got the barriers. Like, wow, that would be in today's terms. Like, dang it, how tough is that? You know, for somebody you love. You know what I'm saying? To carry their dead body the distances and the time that before he actually finally got, you know, they finally settled on the place of burial and finally put her in, you know, it's like, wow, who would endure that today? I mean, that's just kind of one thing that just kind of stuck out, right, as we were reading, like, wow, that's something else, man.
And the fact that the way he went back and forth with the sons of Heth,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying? He's like, I need a place to bury my wife. He's like, whatever place you have, I'll take it. Are you willing to give it to them? And they could have,
mm-hmm.
for whatever went on, they could have gave him a raw deal, but they worked it out something reasonable. And you know what I'm saying? It wasn't just like a little like sepulcher. They gave him like the cave and everything. You know what I'm saying? It was like today would be considered a family plot. So that when all his people in his family die, they have a place where they can go and rest, put everybody in the family to rest.
And he can take it for free. They were trying to give it to him.
Yeah.
And he refused.
Yeah.
What he wanted to pay for, he said he did it in front of all the sons of Heth to ensure that, you know, everyone saw how much he paid for it. And they said they made it sure, like what land, they cleaned all the trees, all the stuff of that land, which was going to be his. That was in the agreement or the purchase agreement, if you will.
400 shekels, and he didn't have to give up nothing.
They were going to give it to him for free, but he's like, I'm going to pay you.
Right.
I'm going to pay you. No, I'm going to pay you.
You know, sometimes in agreement with everything you brought out, if I could just add just a little 2 cents. Remember, this is after Abraham had to go save Lot from the five kings that he took to the Sodom and Gomorrah and that whole land. A lot of people have this, we have this impression because we read and we don't really study. Remember, it said Abraham took 300 of his trained servants that were born in his house. And they were born in his house. If we give each one of those trained servants a mom, that's 600 people. Give him a dad, that's 900 people. And these are servants that were just trained to be protection, security. We're not talking about the how much cattle did he have that him and Lot had to split the whole land of the Middle East.
Because the herdsmen kept getting in the fights.
Because they kept getting in the fights for how much they had. We get this impression that it was just old dusty Abraham,
a little
decrepit old woman, and like a Ethiopian hut with some grass and a patch of mud. And
you see the wind blowing through.
Right. There's an old mangy dog with flies flying around him. There's a cow. A camel. To have all that he had, this would take real estate. This would take wealth. He was the friend of the Most High. He left Ur of the Chaldees with riches, with servants. He came, and then when he got to Egypt, when the Egyptian king took Sarah,
they gave him more.
Gave him more what? Cattle. Servants.
Yeah.
Stay taken care of.
Herds. Abraham had wealth. So to come back and be respected by these kings and by these Hittites, it wasn't just the one man and his woman, and it was just them out there twiddling their thumbs.
A couple of hobos.
A couple of hobos. I got to stick with this rag tied to the back of it.
And we saw you, Abraham, and we feel sorry for you.
Abraham,
nomads, just kind of.
You all pitiful.
Okay, you got to look at it like this, because and the children, he answered Abraham, saying unto him, "Hear us, my Lord, thou art a mighty prince among us." Okay, is the prince?
A prince has, exactly.
Is he doing without?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is he not got?
Yeah.
You're saying the movies, the renditions they always try to make of this, that's what they always make it look like. But that ain't what we're reading.
If we look at this again, and put it in the place that he had, how does one man go fight five kings? This ain't no Jet Li.
Right. God. There's more to the story.
Romeo Must Die.
Yeah, Romeo Must Die. Karate Flick.
Right. Bruce Lee.
He had land. He had wealth. He had abundance. There's nothing wrong with that. But this impression that he was just a poor, broke, nothing, nobody of a man. You had the respect of five kings. You had the respect of Egypt. You had that respect. You weren't just one man doing that. But now, what kind of management skills did you have? What kind of, to deal with feeding, if you got 300 trained men that were born in your house, these were born in your house, 300. How are they eating? Where's their shelter? If they have kids and families, how's that being accommodated for?
Gotta be well.
The clothing of 300 trained men born in your house. What kind of education system was going on? What kind of things were happening? And then you gotta have blacksmiths. You gotta have goldsmiths. You gotta have tailors. You gotta have the servants that was just dealing with the whatever crops and whatever herbs and whatever herds.
Agriculture.
Carpenters.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot going on, and as opposed to like the image that's left, or the impression they want to give about our ancestry, or about our culture, about us. He had the respect of the. We might have the thinking like it was a few men of Heth, 5-6 men.
Right, right. Downplayed it big time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to no, you were dealing. If you were dealing with the men of Heth, you were dealing with their government. You were dealing with the king, the princes, the counselors, the whole government of Heth.
Because it talks about you met him at the gates.
Right, exactly.
And that's where the officials of the city were always at. They were at the gates of the city. So they decided on who was able to come in and who wasn't able to come in. They
exactly.
They wouldn't know what was going on.
They had respect unto him as opposed to having the power to take everything he had away from him.
They had better respect. I got service too. I got an army also, but I'm willing to work this treaty out.
Right.
Because that's what it became, a treaty. Where everybody sees it, knows, understands that this was done the right way. I didn't come to houses from y'all. I didn't come to intimidate, do whatever y'all. I was very diplomatic in my dealings with you. So is it okay for Hebrews to be diplomatic?
God, right. It gives a better perspective, man. I'm glad for bringing that out, man, because our minds and the way they depict it on screens and, you know, whenever they do. You know what I mean? Like Noah's Ark, that movie, you know what I mean? They always, it ain't never really according to the scriptures. They always downplay it. They always make it look like some dusty old hobos.
Right.
And it wasn't like that at all.
So again, is it okay to deal diplomatically with nations?
We did. We do all the time.
He said, I get to diplomat. None of my seeds gonna marry y'all seed.
Yeah. It'd be possible to live peaceably.
Yeah, that ain't gonna happen. But to be diplomatic.
God.
It does say if it's not possible to live peaceably with all men.
It says that, right?
It does say that.
God. Just checking.
Yeah. We did deal, but it was restrictions, but yeah, diplomatically, like you said, we weren't at that time marrying into their families and all of that.
And that's what God got mad at us for.
Yeah, when we started doing that, exactly. At one point, right, up until a certain point, none of that was going.
There's nothing wrong with being diplomatic and civil.
Right.
That's not against the law.
Okay. Sure.
You're not a sellout because you're dealing diplomatically.
Mm-hmm.
You said, what? You didn't just go in there with them headlines and just take this.
Get him out of here. Stone him at the gate.
Oh, soft ass nigga. Forget being wise and serve as harmless as those, right? So Paul went to Agrippa, right, and started cussing Agrippa out. You damn Edomite. You damn heathen. You the son of the devil.
What are you doing, huh? That was, what happened with that? What was it? Levi and Simeon?
Yeah.
Philistines.
Birth contract.
That shit wasn't necessary, yeah.
I think we overlook a lot of the things that the scriptures really talk about, because even when you think about the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and they try to trip Christ up on the question, they're like, well, no, do we pay taxes? And Christ came back, he's like, well, when is the Caesar, what is Caesar? There's still a way that we're supposed to deal. It doesn't mean that we stop what we got going on.
Right.
But there's a way that we still handle situations properly.
And at the same time, give it Caesar for his taxes. He said, go vote.
He's like, you make sure you go to the ballot.
You make sure you be a Democrat or Republican up in this piece and whatever. No.
Register early.
When you're around them, deal accordingly. But keep it moving. You got more work to do.
Right.
He says, when you're with your adversary, do what? Agree with him quickly.
So I'll
get that right now. Con, that's as well. Con.
All right, Acts 25 and 8. While he answered himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended anything.
That's excellent.
Hmm.
Con.
So I saw the white man with a little kid. I just went and slept. I just, you know what I'm saying? It was just all brutal. You know what I'm saying? It was just, I'm a Hebrew, nigga. Take me to jail. Lock me up. I don't want to teach nobody. I'm trying to represent. Who?
Go to war every time, every little brush with another nation. It had to be war.
Abraham thought that Eleazar was going to be his heir. Did the Mormon listen to Eleazar when it came to looking for the wife for we have to read it in Genesis 24. Did the Mormon hear Eleazar's prayer?
Yeah.
He heard him. We got a lot of studying we need to do. We need a lot of cleansing, mental cleansing. We need to do. I ain't talking about now. Go out and start marrying the nations. I'd be damned. Make sure this on tape. And I'm saying that all nations can be saved. We know the scripture says that Christ is coming to save Israel from the hand of all that hate us, and from our enemies. So I'm not. Don't get Mashaba twisted. Don't get this broadcast twisted. This is still about the salvation of Israel and us going back home to our land that was promised to us from the beginning. But to come back and be diplomatic. Somebody to be wise and serve as harmless as doves. When you agree with them very quickly, being the police, you agree with them quickly, what do they let you do? They let you go. So if you had the street speaking, cool. I don't need to be fringed up, girded up, got my headband on everything. Cops stop me. I'm like, yeah, because you the MF devil, you damn cracker. Aren't you trying to go street teaching?
It's caused a whole bunch of problems for you.
Just agree with him. Just do what the scripture says.
Right, you
say, you now go do what?
Serve the Most High.
Go straight teach.
Right.
Or if you're just trying to get some store to get some bread.
Agree with that adversary.
Give it to him. So he can go about his day and go brag to his wife and kids and his boyfriend about, man, this big nigga, a man I had, he was scared.
I said, this is the registration.
You know what he gave me? Man, I had it trembling.
You should see
that. Man, come here, babe. You gonna get some of this good loving tonight, cause I'm the man. Tell me I'm the man. And that big nigga scared. No, you really didn't. I got shit to do also. So if you gotta feel big and bad and go to the locker room and you taking your gun off and telling the rest of the boys about how. Good.
Movie Belly. DMX ran the light right in front of that cop. That cop didn't.
Dumb.
Yeah.
And that was a movie.
Yeah. That cop didn't even go after him, though.
Do a California stop here in Albuquerque. Right. You get to stop.
Right.
You ain't running right through no damn light.
We can leave.
There's no, that we can use wisdom.
Right.
To get job. The wisdom is not that I made sure I cussed out everybody. There's a time and place for everything, though.
Mm-hmm.
Out of Chris Rock say, there's a time to push a 3-year-old kid down the stairs. There's a time and place for everything. I just say, do it like Moses did. Moses looked this way. He looked that way. And he slew the Egyptian. I'm just reading the scripture.
Right. Right. There was a time for
there's a time and place for everything. I have to be on some uber gangster whatever. That's not always the time and place for things. We read what our father Abraham, he understood the diplomacy. He understood he could have just housed the cave, but why? Why cause those problems later on? It says a prudent man perceives the evil. Why house and take the property? He does. Now who's got to deal with who's on our land? Now Isaac got to deal with his madness,
mm-hmm.
Or Jacob, whoever else got to deal with the madness. Why not go ahead and deal with the right way? Got this treaty. Everybody was here. Everybody seen it. Witnesses paid for it. They seen me paid for it. Done.
Joseph. Another example, when the Pharaoh that was working with Joseph gave him everything, and the new Pharaoh came in, I don't know these guys, boom, put them to work. They are right there in my kingdom. They want to work.
Right. But with Abraham, we're seeing the wisdom that this man had. I'll pay for it so that now, if this can be my burial site, it don't get messed with. Being diplomatic. Being diplomatic, waiting on the Most High. Well, I'm not saying just be passive. I'm not saying be a coward, just be a coward, but be wise. When you're out street teaching, you get raw then. If it's something that's really about to affect your family, get raw then. But otherwise, you can be diplomatic. You can be wise as doves. We got a lot of work we got to get done. We got a lot of people we got to raise up. Not everybody's in jail. There's a lot of people not in jail. That if you're in jail, how are you going to reach them?
Cause unnecessary problems.
He already told us someone's going to be thrown in jail anyway, so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But why be done and get yourself thrown in on purpose?
Right.
There's a lot of things we'd be doing, a lot of people we could be reaching. But where we at with the reading now? Unless any, y'all have anything else to bring out?
You know, you start at 24 and 7.
Genesis chapter 24, verse 7. The Lord God of heaven, which took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, and which spake unto me, and I swear unto me, saying, unto thy seed will I give this land. He shall send his angel before thee, and thou shalt take a wife unto my son from thence. And the woman will not be willing to follow thee. Then thou shalt be clear from this, and not bring not my son thither in. And the servant put his hand under the thigh of his master, and swear to him,